All right, good. It's on.
Hello.
Sorry. All right.
Am I
Yeah.
on?
Yeah, it's on.
Okay. So, hello and welcome to a truly special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe, and I welcome you on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyeagwa. I say that today is truly special because we have a guest today in today's episode. And this guest has been something of a friend of mine for many, many years, for several decades, let's say. We haven't seen each other in a while, but he's been an important participant in the landscape of civil liberties, the struggle for civil liberties in Nigeria. So it's my delight to welcome Richard Akinola as our
Thank you.
guest today. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you so much.
So,
Thanks for having me.
yes. So, Richard is, of course, a multi-talented person. He's somebody who has been, as I said, very active in the civil liberty space in Nigeria for many, many years. Something that somebody you might call, which you should call a veteran in the struggle. So, if I start introducing him, we might take too long, but it's actually very late in Nigeria where Richard is. So we want him to be awake for the little time that we're going to have a conversation with him. So I'm going to read quickly a very quick bio that gives you a sense of Richard. So Richard Akinola is a legal affairs journalist of more than 41 years, an activist and an author of 15 books, which straddle such subjects as the media, politics, human rights, and law. He's one of the four founders of the Civil Liberties Organization, which was founded on October 15, 1987, and is a member of the pro-democracy movement, and he was a member of the pro-democracy movement during the military rule. He is currently the editor of Corruption Cases Journal and Media Law Journal. Again, Richard, as a dear friend and as a kindred spirit, as a compatriot, as somebody that I've long admired, it's my real pleasure to welcome you to our podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So let me take you back. A founding member of the Civil Liberties Organization, 1987. Could you describe for our audience the kind of climate in which the Civil Liberties Organization, CLO, came into being?
Okay. Buhari was the military head of state from 19 December 31, 1983, to August 27, 1985, when he was toppled by General Babangida. And after he was toppled, despite all the atrocities of General Buhari as head of state with the various human rights infractions, and of course using his their defunct, I mean using the that's NSO then, now defunct, the precursor of SSS. And then it was headed by Ambassador Rafiq Daddy, and lots of human rights abuses before trial of Ndukayo Rabo, Thompson, and the Guardian. And of course, I mean, various people were detained under Decree 2 of 1984. So, and we began, a couple of us, myself, Olusegun Agbekoba, Clement Nwankwo, Abdul Oro, then Ozekwume joined us. So we're going to court, I mean, so we go to prison. Lots of people were detained at the Kirikiri prison and Ikoyi prison in Lagos. So we'll go there, find out those who have been detained for, I mean, several number of years, not necessarily under Decree 2, but even under normal, I mean, there's what they call the holding charge in those days. And there used to be law of wandering, and the police would just, I mean, pick up people who they claimed were non, I mean, just wandering about. So a lot of people were just packed into various prisons. So we'll go to the prisons, find out those who have been detained without trial. Then we started going to courts here and there on behalf of those people. And interestingly, Buhari, who was a brutal dictator, I mean, in between 1884 and 1885, became a victim of what he perpetrated. Babangida detained him for 18 months. But despite the fact that we were victims of his high-handedness as military head of state, we did not shy away from advocating for his release on a regular basis. We kept on championing his release among other detainees. So at the end of the day, we don't feel that, look, instead of all this staccato approach to this issue, and it's not well coordinated. So we sat down in Onitsha Gbagbo's chambers at Apapa Road. Apapa Chambers on 15th of October 1987. That's how Civil Liberties Organization came into being, and we started the various investigations into various human rights infractions, and went to courts on behalf of detainees, issuing press statements, advocacies, and of course, I've been trying to get our friends in the media to key into the whole struggle. And that's how we started. Then shortly after CDHR, came into being, and that's Committee for the Defense of Human Rights, then headed by Bekola Sonkuti. So from there, because CDHR actually came into being through Femi Aborishade campaign. Femi Aborishade was an activist, but he was detained for a long period. So, and it was the campaign for the release of Femi Aborishade that actually brought CDHR. So it's metamorphosed from Free Femi Aborishade Committee to Committee for Defense of Human Rights. Then after CDHR, of course, been a couple of human rights bodies, CRP, Functional Rights Project came into being, and of course, different bodies. And of course, after several years, and as CLO began to expand, and we went beyond just, detention, fighting for those who were detained, then we had to, specialize on various aspects into the media, into prisons, then police, into environmental rights, and different aspects. So, and from there, a number of human rights bodies began to emerge. And I'm talking about specialized areas where you have claim by this comrade who died 2 years ago. Claim came out, then various Chukwuma.
Innocent,
yes. Came out, from claim. And of course, then Festus Okoye started Human Rights Monitor in Kaduna. And that's how the whole thing began, and the various bodies emerged. And of course, because the climate under which we operated at that time, was sometimes when I look back now, and I see, in the age of internet, in the age of phones, age of social media, and I begin to wonder how possible. How did we do it? No phones, no internet, nothing. And the struggle, it was analog struggle. We're not digital struggle today. And sometimes you need to wonder how, but the commitment was there, because at that time, the student movement was ideological. Not the mercantilist ones that we have today. So, and that's why when we were growing in the CLO, a large cadre of staff were former student union leaders that were recruited. So the commitment was there. And if I recall, there's a particular instance when CD had emerged, because the Campaign for Democracy became the umbrella body of various human rights and pro-democracy groups. When we were trying to, instead of fighting individually, Babangida and on ending transition program, so we had to coalesce into one umbrella body. Then Beko was our first chairman. Then of Beko Rasokuti
under the campaign then, course, for had, campaign for the
Then Joe Dubaki. Was just then later Sylvester Odion. I mean, so it was, during that period when we would print flyers, I mean, then posters, we would go to those who are familiar with Lagos, Ikorodu Road, the Pangro, all those places, at 2 a.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m., with paint and brush, when vehicles are not moving, on the main road, right, IBB must go. Then graffiti on different places at late in the night, 2 a.m. Then people wake up in the morning and the security people will see IBB must go on the main road. So it was quite a daring, I mean, things we are doing. I recall a particular instance, I can't forget, Uche Oyegbocha was saddled the responsibility to go and distribute some of, in quotes, subversive material. So some people were sent to the north, to different parts of the Abdul Mahmoud and the rest of them. So Oke was sent to the east, I think that is or Port Harcourt. So incidentally, he got there very late. And then incidentally, where he was supposed to pass the night was either his brother or his uncle, or the relation, who was a director in SSS. So, and he had all this subversive material. Uchi said he was just thinking, if this man just found out what he was carrying. So somehow he managed to keep it under his bag. And by 5 a.m. the next morning, he had disappeared from the house. So these are some of the risks that people took just for the sake of democracy. So, and then, of course, under Abacha, the struggle continued. Then when Major Mustafa became the Alpha and Omega of the country, he was a de facto president, and with his strike force, I mean, killing people, I mean, killing opponents. In fact, Abuja was a no-go area for us, because, I mean, everywhere you have the strike force and all the underground people here and there. So, and it was a terrible period. And take for example, when this funny character called who was doing Abacha, I mean, 2 million man match for Abacha.
Oh, so Daniel Kanu.
Mm-hmm. So he did. I mean, he launched that. That's, I mean, heavily funded by the government. So our winner said, okay, since you have done your 2 million man match for, we too will hold our 5 million man match against Abacha. So we now chose Yaba as a venue. Then Marwa, Brigadier Marwa, was the military governor of Lagos, and the first party was Army Staff. I mean, one that such thing would not be tolerated. Then Marwa now took it over from there. Marwa now, I mean, addressed a press conference, and now figuratively used his swagger to mark the floor and say, "Look, that he dare us to cross this line." That we wait for us in Yaba. Of course, we say, okay, we'll go to Yaba. Whatever happened, will happen. We dare them, soldiers, police, SSS, from the place. We went there, we were attacked, I mean, beaten. Odisha's right eye was swollen, he was beaten very well. And so, but what was instructive was that we dared. They said that they challenged us, and we said, okay, this country belongs to all of us. If you could allow Daniel Kanu to hold his own 2 million man match in Abuja, then we have the right to hold our 5 million man match against Abacha. And Abacha must go. So with all those things, I mean, it was there. And then, of course, with the coupled with the progressive wing of the media, led by the News and Tell, of course, I mean, Tell was close. I mean, was they came out with another publication. The News was shot. They came out with them, and all this is underground. And in fact, as a matter of fact, it was just recently we were discussing. I was discussing with somebody from the News. I mean, who was a reporter then, And he was not telling me that, as a matter of fact, that it was during that period they got to know that the man that was selling all this funny stuff in front at their gate was an SSS informant.
Whoa.
So whoa. Because they had that in the newsroom. They had an newsroom. So when it was later that somebody from the SSS leaked that information, and so they bought that place. I mean, they were angry. And interestingly, not everybody in the system loved what was going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, the repression, even there were some soldiers, I mean, were not the support of all of us. So some of them became sympathetic even mm-hmm. to our cause. Yeah, mm-hmm. they couldn't come out, but they gave us information like Dakporo Yomi. That was said that Dakporo Yomi because it was the informant from mm-hmm. DMI. Mm-hmm. That's, and look, if you stay one more day, this country you are dead. Leave now, they are on their way. So, and that's how that was able to escape. And that's what was there on the when they are coming and how people, I mean, underground. And you know, to operate underground without any food, I mean, it was such, I mean, a tough thing. So, when I look at today's generation of youths, who told us, who keep on saying, there was nothing like that. They don't know history of what has happened. Mm-hmm. Many of them are just in their early 20s. They mm-hmm. don't know what has happened. So if they knew what happened and then coupled with the struggle for June 12th and all those things, I mean, they won't be talking that, there was nothing like that. Yes. Our generation has failed. Mm-hmm. But every generation, I mean, because the struggle is dynamic, and every generation has to, I mean, affect different approaches.
Yes.
As I mean, we had a different approach to it. The approach of Zeke, Awo, and Co. Abamakole for struggle for independence was different, and then post independence, the struggle was different. Then fighting the military was different. So and the struggle now under the current democratic situation is different. Mm-hmm. Now, apart from that, I mean, it's digital. But again, I mean, under the military, where everyone seemed to be agreed to face a common enemy, now you face different enemy and what they call maybe constructive engagement in some aspect. And even when people are generally agreed to protect, the next thing is they are being sponsored by party A or party B. That black women always come up. So that's the difference
let me come in at that point okay. Because you have done a really superb work of really contextualizing the struggle for civil liberties in Nigeria. And one of the things that struck as you told the story was the multi-ethnic, multi-religious composition of those who fought. In fact, multi-class, so that the struggle had people from different parts of Nigeria collaborating for the good of the country. We have people who belong to different religious affiliations, some of them not believers, some of them atheists, some of them Christians, Muslims, and so on. But they banded together because they saw common ground, right? And then, as you said, there were people within the ruling system itself who were not happy and who were, in a sense, trying to undermine the system from within. But you also said that at that time, the student movement was, in your word, ideological, not mercantile. So now we have politicians sponsoring student union candidates for student union elections, so that in a sense, student unionism has become co-opted into the system, the oppressive apparatus of governance in Nigeria.
Yeah.
How did this all happen? How do you account for this tragic transformation in By the way, it's okay. Not only the student unions. You also find professional organizations like the Nigerian Medical Association, used to be very, very strong, very powerful.
Yes.
The Nigerian Bar Association. So suddenly you find that the leadership of this association see themselves as extensions of the government in power at any given time. So how do we account for this?
Well, let me start from this movement. I think it's a major tragedy, because when you look at what has happened, I mean, the history of the student union movement from Nantes struggle to Nantes, and how the Nantes of late Chris Abachi, the Nantes of Abdul Mahmoud, the Nantes of Lara Logudade, I mean, the Nantes of Titus Mann. And when you look at all those, I mean, those departments, and you see the current dispensation, I mean, feel like shedding tears. Now, it was, from my own understanding, I think it was during the period of attempt abduction or after of Ngige that the whole thing started to deteriorate considerably. When Ngige was abducted by Zimba or whatever, what's the name?
Chris Oba.
Then Nance now became factionalized. Chris sponsored a faction of Nance to come and demonstrate, in favor of that failed adoption. And it was that same that actually decimated, buildings and structures in Oka. I mean,
Anambra, actually, yeah. The bunch structures,
Precisely. So it was that faction of Nance. And now the leader of that Nance today is in the House of Reps. He later became a politician. He had been in the two parties. He had been in APC. He had been in ACN. And before APC, he had been to PDP. He had been chairman of their party. He now is in, now, if I contested to be governor of Anambra State, he lost. Now he is in House of. So, and now you see Nance members make appointments. You have chief of staff. You have about 20. In fact, they won an Akwa Ibom. Last 2 months ago, I saw list. They had about 21 SAs or SS announced. That's SUG government, SUG press. So then you have there was an incident. That's about 2 months ago. I can't remember. You know, one university in the northern part of the country where the SUG press, because they have you see the kind of vehicles they use as official vehicle, you think that they are politicians.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then the guy had a hired policeman.
Hmm.
You know the way the DSS people move, side by side politicians. He hired policemen to be on both sides as he was moving in his car, his convoy. But fortunately for the police high command, he got the policemen arrested and they were dismissed. So that is how the whole thing has degenerated.
Mm-hmm.
And now, moving from the student movement. Okay, before I go forward, the last election of NAM, the guy who had the temerity to say in an interview in the Punch that he paid for the hotel bills of everybody that came to support him. So where did you get the money?
Mm-hmm.
A student. And you are boasting that you paid for hotel bills for 2-3 days, apart from other logistics. And of course, in any of such elections, there must be gunfights because the courts are involved. So different, we must belong to one, the cause or the other. So that is how the thing has so much generated. Now, coming outside student union movement, now you now have what people will call non-governmental individuals purporting representing organizations.
Mm-hmm.
It will be representing NGOs.
Mm-hmm.
And the all manner of funding names and non-existent names that are not even registered at CSC, you see them hired by politicians say that they are protesting, they are going to the National Assembly to protest some very national because they are hired by politicians. For example, I still can't wrap my head around how so-called activists, of course, we know they are just hired, and we said during the Buhari's regime, that's by Buhari's government about 3 years ago, when they had some running battles with Amnesty International over issue of soldiers killing innocent people in Boko Haram and the rest of it. So they had some so-called civil society picketing Amnesty in Abuja.
Abuja.
I mean, because any reasonable civil society person, if you say an acting so-called, if would know the history of Amnesty International. I mean, that's the foremost, human rights body in the world. I mean, started by Peter, and how he started fighting for human rights all over the world. And now it is that same body, the Nigerian office, that you are picketing and you claim to be human rights body. Of course, these are people who are just being hired, and that's how the whole thing has degenerated, the issue of struggle. That now you can hire some people, purporting to be human rights people without any pedigree. You don't know what they do for a living. I mean, so these are some of the challenges we have seen. And of course, which has also affected the professional. We don't have the MBA of the Akaba Shores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when MBA was in, we don't have the Ganefa Ohimi. Mm-hmm. I mean, that period, you don't have NMA where Bekola Putin was in charge. So all these things have perhaps the only one left for now, maybe is to a large extent. I mean, that's so otherwise. All the even MSC just let's just give it a benefit of doubt. But NSC has degenerated considerably. I mean, we can't talk about as that's one compared. So, and if I NSC started, going down in my own estimation during the time of Adams, because make all the noise, we are going to shut down the country. How is it that one stock up, they stock up food, blah 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 blah, make all the noise? Then Obasanjo will call him to the villa, and the rest strike call. That has been the pattern, and it has been then, of course, even though we had a funny character called Pascal Bafia in 1983, who wanted to become Abiola's deputy. And that's when NSC began to go down, with a character like Pascal Bafiao.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at that time, we've been having this kind of degeneracy in the labor movement. And of course, politicians have infiltrated and with money and stuff like that, it takes somebody with very strong and strong will to withstand that kind of pressure. And that's why, we have the kind of challenges we have today.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about the progressive wing of the media and the role they played in the first phase of civil liberty struggle that you were engaged. Is there a place where you still look at elements of that progressive media today? And if so, what has happened in that media landscape?
I think with the liberalization of the media space, now people have gone beyond the mainstream media, the Punch, the Guardian, Disney, the Vanguard, Daily Trust, I'm talking about the mainstream media, because they have their own limitations. Now, because of liberalization, you have the social media, and where people are be able to navigate the media space much more effectively. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have the Sahara Reporters, Premier Times, Tribune News. So, and with the advent of the online media, that's to some extent has kept the tempo of the struggle. Yes, I know that the mainstream media, they have their own limitations because of proprietary things. Because of the downturn economy, it has affected the media substantially. And the main spend, in this economy, Otherwise, I mean, why would I mean come briefly and go down?
Yeah.
Next, I mean, probably by Dele, I mean, was so promising, but I think Dele was so idealistic, thinking that, well, this is America. I want to run something in the US. But when he entered the system and discovered that you could not run stories against a person like Desiani, for example, and he would stifle all areas where you could get advert, whether from NAPC or from oil companies or for the government. So it has affected the mainstream media substantially. So limitation to which the mainstream media can play the role like that the news and tell played under the bridge. And of course, we understand that this position was different. We had a common enemy, so everybody faced a common enemy, which was different. But now, I mean, we're in a different disposition of democracy in which there are various interests. And of course, I mean, once you go after a particular consistently against a particular government, the next thing that you are being used against, you are being used by party A or party B. So, but the advent athletes like Tebu, Sahara, Premier Times, and Co. I mean, that has to a large extent, I mean, part of that, I mean, partially what Tell and the news used to do. And of course, beyond that, we also have a group that is not purely a media outfit, but investigative outlets like Freedom, this Freedom of the, what was it? International Center for Investigative Journalism by Tayo Ayeto. I mean, that one, I mean, that's another good outlet. And of course, we have the Shuyombo, which is doing very well. So those ones have been able to cover the issues that the mainstream media, I mean, has been the lapses that they are going through, that they are facing. And of course, let me get at there's a Rufai, for example, in Arise TV.
Mm-hmm.
Rufai has been of barrage because of perception that is against, and I know that that is the, and of course the normal accusation, okay, is being sponsored by the other. So nobody wants to look his own point of view that, okay, if you believe that this guy is, I mean, it's a red, don't bother about watching the morning program. The people still watch the morning program, mm-hmm. and they keep every time, I mean, disparage the guy that is this and that. With the advent of the online media, I'm not talking about the bloggers now. I'm talking mm-hmm. about the professional ones. I mean, yes, they have been able to fill that gap, and to a large extent, have been able to salvage whatever is left of the reputation of the media.
Okay, let me sort of bring a more sort of contemporary question before I invite my co-host Emeka to perhaps weigh in with a question or two. The recent, well, not so recent elections in Nigeria in February, I would say that in the view of so many people, brought out the worst in, and I'm tough again, the phrase you use, the progressive wing of the media. And when I think about the progressive wing of the media, I think about colleagues of ours, friends of ours, people like Kunle, but also Bayo Onanuga was very much in that conversation. And then after the presidential election, Bayo Onanuga issued that viral tweet that was seen by millions and which was shocking to millions, where he saw that Igbos should never again think about, in his words, interfere in the politics of left. Some of us who have, you know, have known Bayo and admired him, but it was a moment where we said, have we learned from Nigerian history, from the Nigerian Civil War, from the trap in Rwanda, where somebody was a section of the country and basically said to them, you are strangers in a part of your country. So I don't know whether this was an issue that you have thought about, because for me, it was a very, I actually haven't figured out how to say it. It was a very chilling when I read a friend of a former colleague, Bayo Onanuga, put on Twitter.
The February and March election in Nigeria actually opened up and maybe some hidden tricks in the ball. And it's not just about Bayo. I mean, in the current disposition, I mean, I've read terrible things that I never imagined that, I mean, people will come with. Mm-hmm. And in the case of considering the background when he was coming, and that's why, I mean, if you recall, I had an issue with which I had to write an open, which went right. And it was a respect of, I think, Dati Ahmed, the running mate of Peter, came to China, and he made certain comments which show the anchor tried to moderate, but somehow Dati was still making some of those comments. And the next thing was that Bayo wrote to MB, National Broadcast Committee, to sanction. And I said, wait a minute, Bayo cannot be considering where we are coming from, mm-hmm. and the struggles that we have been. And so I had to write that letter, that open letter, I mean, which went viral and also beyond my imagination. And I said, so if you write to channels, I mean, write to NBC against channels, and channels got How will you feel? How you will the news was shut down severally by various military governments, and you are a victim of this media report. And through your own instigation, that a fellow media house got shot. So I felt I was shocked. So I had no choice but to write that open. And yes, some people, I mean. Some friends told me, should have called him, shouldn't have gone out openly. So, Jomomo too is a friend to Bayo. Why didn't Bayo call Jomomo instead of writing a letter to NBC? Mm-hmm. So, as the matter had become a matter of interest, so it's not a matter of calling Bayo. It would be a different thing if Bayo had not made his petition public. He made his petition public, and with the potential, channels could be shot. Eventually, channels was fined, I think, $5 million over that issue. So I was really shocked, because if that letter had been written by somebody else, I wouldn't have just bothered myself. Considering where we are coming from, because the way I placed Bayo and people like Nusai Gebo, mm-hmm. Dakbola Yomi, and all of us, Gunajibade, from where we are coming from, there's a certain level of engagement that I don't expect. So, and having crossed that line, so I had no choice than to engage by your publicly. So these are some of the things that politics brings out on ground people. It's quite unfortunate. So that's the
Emeka, I don't know if you have a question or two for our guest.
Oh yeah, yeah. Very interesting stories. Let me start from saying, you know, the part where you're talking about people don't know the struggle that happened for decades from Shagari's time, or from the end of Shagari's time up until Abacha, and everything that happened. You go on to say, you know, the biggest flaw you've seen in the system. Well, the biggest thing that happened to flaw the system itself was the Ngige case with Chris Uba and the thuggery, the force, the whole what is supposed to be an unconstitutional means to take him out. I mean, I would like to know from your perspective. I believe you guys fought a lot. Let me say that, you know, you fought a lot. You did that whole era, that whole bubble of people. There was a lot of fighting, both from the academics to civil society, all kinds of people, legal. I mean, the name of people who have fought were long and extensive. But does it feel to you that at the end of it, especially when it finally comes, even though it had been teasing for a while, and when I say when it comes, I mean the military exiting power, even though they had been teasing for it, Babangida had teased and teased and teased in the 80s, eventually leaves for essentially Shoneko, who was just a sitting duck, really. Abacha was always going to take over, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. some other person that was stronger than him, which there wasn't one that existed in the military at that point in time. But all that struggle, when it finally comes to Abacha passing in 98, and then Abdusalam, it looks very sincere, he was going to take over office. I'd like to know, like, do you feel, how do you see it in terms of, do you feel like you guys that were in the civil liberty space, I assume you were very strong in that space still at that point in time, I believe you still are now. You guys that were there, do you feel there was an absence of, at the final moment, to have been able to help craft or be part of that process of crafting a transition, a constitution? Because to some degree, it feels like there might have been, but there not might have been, there is a situation where the whole goal was to get the military out of office, which is good, which you alluded to, that it's easier to have one enemy. It's easier to have one enemy.
Thank you for this question. You know, we made a fundamental error. With the benefit of hindsight, we have sat down and analyzed what has happened in the past couple of years, and we have come to realization that we made a fundamental error. Okay, you know, apart from CD, the Campaign for Democracy, then you had the UAD, which is another coalition. Then you have JACON. JACON now, headed by Garifa Ahimi. And JACON made up of Joint Action Committee, which comprised of various organizations and headed by Garifa Ahimi. So there are series of meetings, headed by Danny, Beko, Falano, and others. So, and we made a fundamental mistake, because JACON said Babangida dribbled us several years, Abacha dribbled us. Now Absalami had come, that we couldn't trust Absalami's transition plan, that this under a fellow's word, under Bob. And that's all, we should boycott the transition. And we did. And with the benefit of hindsight, that's a fundamental mistake, major mistake, because we retreated and yielded the space to all these Bukaniyas, that once they seize power and to get it out from them has become a Herculean task. Because in 1999, any goat could win election based on the struggle. I've been talking about the pro-democracy group, NADECO, and all those things. Any one of us who chose to contest at that time would have won, but we boycotted and allowed all this character. In fact, they were begging us, particularly in the Southwest, like AD was in control of Southwest. They were literally begging us with position, for sending House of Reds and stuff like that. And we said, no, we don't want to be part of that. Absalami was just going to the civil report. And Absalami handed over to Obasanjo, and that was the end of the matter. To get them out became an impossible task. So it was a fundamental mistake, because it's not like we just wanted the military out, and after we handed over to this funny character. So your question is quite germane, because we made an error, and I say it's an error which many of us regret.
Yeah, but do you feel so? And I know, because the struggle is legendary. I tell people it's absolutely legendary. You go back to read Tell Temple. People ask me, what do you want to read on Nigerian history? I say, look, if you can get Tell Temple, the Chris Iyanwu's News Watch,
PSM,
PSM,
PSM, And if you understand how the what they went through to publish, some of these guys they didn't even have a physical location to even publish. You just came out on the streets and saw the copies of the magazine from God knows where. Nobody knew where it came from, right? I tell people, go and look for it. If you can find it, go look for it. But I see no constitution, whether written or unwritten, which we have unwritten constitutions for those who don't know, like the British constitutions, and even for written ones, you have this thing. Every constitution has flaws. Nigeria was heavily flawed. You have a lot of thinkers who and I've always believed it, because when Obasanjo was coming in, I had this rose tinted, I was a teenager, mid-teens, and I had this rose tinted goggle of this American system coming to Nigeria, and Nigeria was going to be America in 4 years. And I saw the United States of ABBA coming up. People sit down and I'm not telling you Obasanjo is a great president. People sit down and look at Obasanjo and say Obasanjo squandered a lot, which I do agree. Obasanjo is an imperial president to some degree, and as a friend, democracy experiment, still with the military, this thing of being, he could have done a lot more to, one, recognize the problem, the structural problems that he had inherited. And maybe probably done more to reform the system other than looking for a third term like every prototypical African head of state in the last 200 years. One, do you see the flaw? You see the flaw in the system. One, you had the wrong people come in there, and most of these people have continued to hold on to power. It's not just in Lagos,
exactly.
In Enugu, where I'm from, Chimaroke is 100%. Maybe this last elections he lost some ground. Anywhere you go to, and they are there to perpetuate themselves, perpetuate their family members. Do you see a moving forward? What might you see as a shining castle on a hill? Because it's perpetuation. It's whatever you look at. If it's the judiciary, which have really uncles and relatives and who have been longest serving judges in the history of the Eastern Region. And everybody is just there to perpetuate themselves, perpetuate their immediate children, put them in. I was having that conversation with somebody this morning. I said 8-9 years ago, even when we had our first child 10, 11 years ago, people sent me money from Nigeria, which was, nice. I appreciate it. I needed it. I was just drawing analogy. But 10 years later, I tried to avoid every phone call from Nigeria now. I it's almost like PTSD. It's almost like this is going to cost me money. Every phone call costs money now. And I'm not saying even 10 years ago was that good. And I'm saying that to draw the contrast. You're either super rich in Nigeria. There's no middle class. It doesn't even exist. Or you're just getting by, or you're just super poor. You're managing to get by naturally in this area. So what might you say is, in your view, would be the shining can't see on the hill moving forward for? I mean, given this, like I say, people don't understand the struggle that a lot of you put in. When people even just hearing Olusegun Bakoba's eye getting damaged, it takes me back to things I'd read. And people forget that, even though he released a statement and people were making fun of him this week on the news. And I'm like, Olusegun Bakoba is not somebody people, what he used to be. Everybody gets older. We all do. Things change, but it's just interesting. I don't put my faith personally. Don't put my faith. I never have in the. I think after towards the end of Obasanjo's second term, any faith I had in Nigeria was lost. Even before he openly declared his third term ambitions, any faith I had in Nigeria was lost. Any faith I had in this system was lost. But that's me personally. I would like to hear what you feel is your. Is there
quite frankly, I mean, I don't want to sound pessimistic, but I think the prognosis is not quite encouraging. That's the reality. Because when you look at the situation in which perhaps if I had some, maybe some modicum of integrity, perhaps we would say, okay, let's maybe INEC can, one way or the other, we can manage the possibility. From what we have seen the past couple of months, And with the practice that money is everything, that with money you can get away with murder, with anything in this country. So that is a major, major challenge, quite frankly. And once these people have already dug in, and unfortunately, the institutions that, I mean, if we have very strong institutions, perhaps we will all have some molecule of, I mean, if we have a very strong and relatively independent, and a relatively independent judiciary, but a judiciary that makes Lawan, Ahmed Lawan, to be in the Senate and retain his position as Senate President, as President President, when he did not, contest for primary, I can't just understand. And even the current Senate President, Akpabio, there's a questionable primary that was conducted, and the Supreme Court validated that kind of thing. So when you look at all these things, I'm an incurable optimist, but again, I'm just hoping against hope. Because from all indices, I can't see any substantial change if the institutions that we actually rely on, particularly the judiciary and the electoral body, if those two institutions are not reformed or to show some level of give us some level of confidence, forget it. And that's me. And there's nothing an individual can do to change or to get these politicians out, because they are well entrenched. And you know, Nigeria, everything is money. I told someone that you need three things to win an election in Nigeria. The first is money, the second is money, and the third is money. And once that is done, you can compromise any system, any institution, and that's the end of the matter. Now, before I forget, let me just briefly, you mentioned my friend, Olusegun Bakoba. In fact, this you mentioned, how people are just talking about him. So somebody forwarded to your friend, this and that. So I now sent him a message. I said, Olusegun, what did it happen? Look at the way people are talking about you and this and that. And he said, thank you. So when his reply to me, he was the first to raise the issue of Tinubu not meeting 25% of Abuja, so that it was a requirement that Tinubu people attacked him. Then he made statements again, say Obi people attacked him. So, and now he's talking that lawyers should not discuss Tinubu's certificate matter because it's the Supreme Court, not general public. He's talking about lawyers, not about general public. So, I've advised not to talk, he will not talk again. So, because we say this one, this can't be attacked me. I will say this one, that will attack me. So, what am I supposed to do? So, these are some of the challenges, but that's just find the way. But, in overall, coming back to your question, if those two institutions, judiciary and the electoral body, are not well positioned to change in the 2027 election, forget it.
Let me jump in here, because I think you've been very kind. It's quite late where you are, and you had made a commitment to speak for 30 minutes. I think you have exceeded by this much. So I don't want to, as it were, abuse the generosity that you have extended in speaking, because I know that you are passionate about Nigeria. But maybe we should round up. And in doing this, I'd like to, I have so many questions, but I'd like to ask sort of a personal question and then a broader one. The personal question is that you have been, as I said at the beginning of the program, a veritable veteran of the struggle for civil liberties, human rights in Nigeria. You are still a young man, but not as young as you were decades ago when you started the struggle, right? Yeah. You've had a few scars, as it were. That comes with time, right? With age. So I'm wondering, how much personal energy do you still feel that you have? How much personal passion can you expend in the cause of fighting for a Nigeria where civil liberties are expanded and possibly expansive. So that's one. The other thing is to say to you, for you to sort of periscope what it would take for the Nigeria that you say you are an incurable optimist, the Nigeria that you dream, what would it take to achieve it? Do you see elements within Nigeria and not people of kindred spirit, and not people who transcend in their mentality, ethnicity and sectarianism, the sectarian affiliations and so on, who are willing to fight for a better Nigeria?
Let me start with the second question. I think one can still model, find a semblance of EFF, like the Julius Malema's EFF in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they couldn't defeat ANC, even though they were part of ANC before they pulled out, but they couldn't defeat ANC in the last two elections. But when you watch Julius Malema and his people in the National Assembly, their parliament, you see strong democracy. Yes, they are not in power as president, but the effectiveness of their input is felt in the whole country. So I think it is possible to have a semblance of EF in Nigeria. Yes, we may not be able to get the president, but if you can have a large, reasonable chunk in the parliament to try to galvanize things and our position so that everybody cannot be following the same pattern, the same direction. That's one. Now, coming in terms of my passion, age is no longer on one side, but again, that passion is there. You see, when you look at, one cannot just afford to give up at this side of this struggle at this point in time. Because I recall October in 1996, I could have died that day. I think it's October 16 or so, 1996. That was under Abacha. That was my last detention. I had written something. Then I was in Concord. I had written something about human parts, rack, and kilikili. So, and I got a death threat letter. Then there was no email. So it was posted, death threat letter from that. So one Sunday, I came to office. So, and I said, let me stroll out. Just to, around 5 o'clock, I strolled out of the gate. But before that time, I had followed up on the Rwanda's assassination, and I linked to Abacha. Because of some sequence of certain events and what happened in court, bringing different set of suspects, accused persons to court. So, and I juxtaposed the two photographs of two different set of suspects, and to give them to show government was actually behind the assassination of the one. So. And then that day, I strolled out. As I stepped out of the Concord gate
premises,
yes. So, and a 5-4-4 in those days, and that's what they are used for this Kabu Kabu in those days. So, I thought it was one of those Kabu Kabu vehicles. So, I stopped in front of two guys. Came out, pointed a gun at me, mentioned my name, you are Richard Akin. So before I could put my thoughts together, my first intention was to dash across the room. Before I could gather my thoughts together, they had grabbed me, pushed me inside the vehicle, and zoomed up. Nobody knew what happened. It was a very swift and fast operation. Nobody knew what happened. So I felt, this people got me. Those who wrote the threat. So after about 500 meters, at the toll gate of the airport road, and that vehicle was so they transferred me to that other vehicle. Then zoom, as we were going, but I was sandwiched between the two security men. As we were going, then the one on my left now said, SS, I felt so relieved. So I said, hey, that's what you should have said now. So that's why I don't like So we got to 50 Awolowo Road as usual, and then they started the statement interrogation started, and then I saw them when they were returning their bullets and back into the ambulance. So then I was put in a solitary confinement. So once again, I had to play fast one because I had published something earlier, detention manual for journalists. So on how you detect a security man, how you can write your statement, how to give answers during interrogation, how to survive in detention. So I had written that manual based on my previous experience. So and I, that one came in handy. So I immediately I struck a rapport with one of them. I said, oh boy, because in the office they thought I had gone home. At home, I thought I was in the office. Oh, so God. Nobody knew I was. So I just said a note to him, go to the house, tell my wife, blah, 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 this is what happened. Then take this note, go to the office, collect some amount of money, we share 50-50, and good deal. So and so we are both happy. It came, and we became friends. So because I was in social confinement, no contact. So at the night, around 8, 9 o'clock, after all the big guys would have gone home, so the guy will come and open me out to the car park to take some fresh air. And so I'll give him money to open the gate, go and buy suya, cook, sit down, enjoy ourselves there. So that's how I was surviving because of money. So, and one funny incident. So I think about a week or so, when I was supposed to be, when I was some intervention here and there, so much of noise about my detention. So when I was about to, so the guy had said that I was supposed to be released, so that they'd be likely to release me the next day. So, and it was an offense that they must not see money with. So, and now this money, so because the cell, I mean, it was dilapidated with cracks here and there. So the guy said, okay, I should put the money inside those cracks in the wall of the cell. So, and that the number process, where you go and meet the director, do for the formal release, and that after I will have been released, I should tell them I want to go and I want to go back to the cell. So after I was released, so I went back. So it's if I say I want to go and pray, then go back and go and remove those money and put it in your pocket. So that's what I did after the formal process. Excuse me, sir. I want to go and release. I want to go. And, so I went. So locked my cell. Start removing the money from the wall, right? Hid the money and left. So that's what the. So if when you look at all those experiences, and you can say one cannot just give up at this point in time, with all one had gone through, with all that I've been to DMI, police, SSS. So having gone through all those kind of things, one cannot just say, I give up on Nigeria. No, we must have a way how we can sustain this democracy one way or the other.
Okay. Please, my co-host, Emeka, would you ask a final question, if you do have one?
Okay. I see you have a bit of optimism, which is, I don't know if, I mean, I, you know, democracy is a good thing to some degree, but not to go deep into how I think it's flawed and how it's always been flawed and how we haven't come to develop our own system. But I would say, don't you feel that we need to be fighting? There needs to be more of a fight for a reform of the system to some degree. Because when you say democracy, it seems like, okay, let's keep going and somehow, some way, maybe something will happen within this framework. I don't know if that's the case. I personally, I was born and brought up in Lagos. I see myself as a Lagosian, born and brought up in Sule. I don't even identify really with Enugu where my parents are from. And I've seen as Lagos itself has even gone from a hopeful city to a city that it needs reform. That would be my own, just my own personal experience of just looking at where Lagos should be and where Lagos is. contrary to what anybody would say. But my own personal thing is I think the system needs reform. But for you, I would wonder if you have any final thoughts to just say, well, whether you see some level of reform.
Well, I feel the challenge we have that we're going to face, because the passage of various people, including people in our community, civil society community, the partisanship. You have the pro, those in government, those who have anti, and to have a middle ground becomes a major challenge. But I think it is doable, it is possible, but mutual suspicion is going to be there, because politicians have infiltrated us, and people are, so beholden to certain political interests that they cannot see the larger picture beyond, this person is my person. It's no matter what person this person does. I support that kind of person. So I think it's a major challenge to cross that line, but it is doable. But I think, for now, because of the level of despondency coupled with the economic situation that we have right now, I think the survivor seems to be the main thing now. But maybe, hopefully, in the next 1 year, by God's grace, next year, maybe we need to start, talking and engaging to see how we can paper the cracks within us, particularly pro and anti, and see that, look, at the end of the day, we're all victims, whether you are pro or you are anti. So let's see how we can sit down and plan how to get ourselves out of this room.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, dear friend, compatriot, a very proud and principled Nigerian. It's been such a delight for my co-host Emeka Onyeagwa and me to host you on the Offside Musings podcast. We thank you, and we hope that when we extend another invitation, that you honor us by being our guest. Thank you very much, and have a brilliant night.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Emeka. My brother.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Night.
Good night.